decision in 1954, there was a kind of exhilaration in the country. We all thought all the problems were going to be solved real quickly. And then came the Martin Luther King assassination. Was that 55?
No, 68 was Martin Luther King.
Oh, no.
See, Martin Luther King was assassinated.
Yes.
After Kennedy.
Well, after Kennedy, that's right. Now then, let me see. We had a number of years in which there were struggles through the courts.
But that, not very much happened.
Not very much happened. And
it wasn't until 1964, Lillian, with the March on Washington.
Yes, now that's right.
That's
right. I've got that wrong. Now then, the reason I want to come to that, our activity flourished and was with great determination. I know that the American Jewish Congress threw itself so completely into the fight for Negro rights that there were times when some of their members said, are we a Jewish organization or a black organization? And we had to sometimes remind people that in their enthusiasm, maybe they had forgotten just what we were started for. But when we came to the period of the Martin Luther King leadership, and may I say, I was a member of the Southern Christian Leadership Conference. I used to attend all their meetings in Washington, and we accepted all of these things as part of our assignment. And we never thought there was anything wrong about it. And when the day came, after the Martin Luther King assassination, and we had the riots in the cities, and we saw that in alas, too many cases, the victims were Jewish merchants and storekeepers, and that no effort was made to hold back these attacks. We had suddenly to realize that our people were angry, and many of them protested vehemently that we were putting too much of our work into this struggle. And many of them protested when our money was used to help produce the housing and other services that were really so essential to the black cause. This has been a very troubled period. It's far from a single point of view.
Is that a situation
No.
Where the Jewish community, where the blacks were now living, where the Jews had lived before?
No. This is, you could go to Detroit, to Boston. After all, I was brought up in Roxbury, Massachusetts, which is now a 100% black community. Terrible crime rate. That's where all those murders occurred in recent weeks. And this is happening everywhere. And perhaps we mustn't be too critical of it. But we mustn't be too critical of our own Jewish people either, because they're quite human, and many of them have seen their businesses destroyed and no compensation. You know that on the Hill District, many of those places are locked up, and they can't sell the property, they can't get anything for it, and they can't operate.
Lillian, would you speak to the additional threat to the Jewish community that came from university admissions of less qualified people?
Well, do
and
you want me to?
Jobs. Yes, I think this is part of our current complicated problem.
This has happened, of course, since I'm retired, but I know that some of the best civil rights people that I know through the years who went through every stage of the game with me now find themselves as school teachers being shoved aside while unqualified blacks are pushed ahead of them. Now, I know this has been said to me by people whom I have every reason to believe. And I know it's been at the university too. During these last two decades, housing. And in Pittsburgh, we have not had some of the radical problems that have assailed other cities like New York and Boston, partly because the city of Pittsburgh itself still had areas that were vacant to permit new construction. Are you familiar with the golf course out in East End? You know, the Staten Heights Golf Course, which has since become the locale for a whole lot of new housing. And people didn't have to go outside of the city. And Squirrel Hill itself was not choked with housing. Where there used to be large grounds, there now houses have been constructed. And I think that that took off some of the pressure that might have existed otherwise. Now, we are fully aware that when you get out into suburbia, they are deathly afraid of violence. Oh, I think that generally speaking, there has been a rather wholesome integration in areas. It's not too great, but it's unquestioned. When we have some nice black families up here on Northumberland, and you know, the next street there,
Woodmont,
not Woodmont. What's the next street where Miss?
Ridgeville.
What?
Ridgeville.
No, dear. Further up.
Aylesboro.
No, where? Aylesboro. And you know where Bernice used to live. Dalzell. Oh, I'm getting so I'm really, I ought to be put off in a convent or something somewhere. But this took place, it didn't happen of itself, by the way. It didn't happen of itself. We had to take an interest in it.
And tell
people
us about
it. People came to us.
All right.
And said, now, I've had an offer as a black family wants to buy my house. Shall I sell it to them? I said, are they decent people? He said, yes. I said, then sell it to them. Well, the neighbors may complain. Well, I said, I don't see why they should. And you know, of course, I always used it. Lorraine, would you pour out a few cups of tea here? I think that's it. I always used the law as my defense. I said, you know, it's against the law not to sell to anybody who comes, regardless of race, creed, or color. And if you do, we'll have to report you. I'm not sure that I ever would have reported anybody, but I told him that I would. And I know one man told me that I scared his wife because I told him that. But you know, the family moved in and everything was pretty all right. They were they remained there for years. And it's been a good neighbor. And this kind of thing has happened all the way. We haven't had any of that flight from the neighborhood. You know, that happens
and
in some communities.
And, of course, the same thing is true, is it not, of Jews moving into formerly non-Jewish neighborhoods?
Well, I suppose so. I know that over in Mount Lebanon, there are still some segregated areas that won't sell to Jews. I know that.
But the city of Pittsburgh?
But in the city of Pittsburgh, my dear, it was only a few years ago you couldn't... A Jew couldn't move into that row of houses right in back of mine. Miserable little row of attached houses. And up to a few years ago, just down there on Wilkins Avenue. So there's no use saying that we don't have bigotry. We've got plenty of bigotry right here. And, of course, on the race level, too. But it's breaking down slowly. But I think definitely. Now, we could deplore some of the things that happened. I think it's safe to say that we are definitely going to move forward as we should. Not as rapidly as we should. Because, unfortunately, the negative aspects of this integration program are too much in evidence. But I think that it can't hold it back. We don't want to hold it back, but I don't think it can.
Do you then see Pittsburgh as becoming a truly well-integrated city? Because in that respect, it would be unique from many other.
Yes. Well, not completely. It's going to take a long time. But of course, it's also my feeling that separate groups may not have the urge for total integration. I think that we must bear this in mind. Just as Jewish people like to live near Jews, black people will like to live near black. They don't have to be with other people all the time, but they should not be shut out. They should not be shut out. And it's just as Polish people like to live with Poles or Italians. There's a sense of family that carries on with them.
Isn't freedom of choice the issue?
It should be freedom of choice. And I think we should also learn to know people and get to like them, live with them. My street here is a very mixed street, partly because at one end we have Linden School, and at the other end we have the church school. And that keeps families, Catholic and Jewish families, living on the same street. We've been on this street for 53 years, and I've seen this happen all the time.
Lillian, let's come back a moment. When you went to Radcliffe and your husband went to Harvard,
yeah,
you must remember the climate there as far as Jews and non-Jews.
Yes.
Would you be able to make any comparisons between those relationships and the time when your children went back to Radcliffe and Harvard?
Well, I don't know. There was always a snooty element in Cambridge. Can't get away from that. And I think there still is. But I do think Jewish students were always very happy in Cambridge, at Harvard and Radcliffe.
In your time,
yes.
As well.
Well, in my time, we were very few. You know, there weren't very many of us. But those of us who were there were well treated. I was an officer of my class in my sophomore year and in my senior year, and I didn't even live in the dormitories. And generally, most of that is confined to the dormitory dwellers, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
But, he wants some more cookies. So, I don't know what to say about the atmosphere. I don't think Jews can ever complain. Not about the Harvard complex, anyway. You know, when Harvard, I think Life magazine about 5 or 6 years ago had some special feature about top scholars. Who do you suppose they chose to be the top scholar of Harvard? Harry Wolfson. Do you know Harry Wolfson? No, he has a real guttural accent. He's a little bit, a little shrimp of a man, a big brain, you know. He was my professor of Semitics when I was there.
Oh,
a very dear friend of the family. But they chose Harry Wolfson as the symbol of the intellectual leadership of Harvard University. Now I suspect that up at, you know, about 25 years ago, the American Jewish Congress asked me to survey the University of Pittsburgh hiring practices. Well, they told me to look through the catalogs for about 20 years and check out Jewish names. There were very few. I could almost name the full professors on one hand. I think there was Professor Isaacs, Professor Robinson, did you ever hear that name? Robinson.
Alexander Silverman.
Lowy. Then there were lot of instructors. They would hire the Jewish boys to be instructors at $1,500 a year and carry the load, but they would never advance them to the higher echelons. I really think it was when, after Litchfield was here, that they began to grab the bright Jewish scholars and bring them in. And it brought distinction to the university. Yeah. I remember it took me hours and hours and hours, and I had the catalogs of all the years and couldn't find Jews.
And then in what proportion did you find them as of recent years?
Well, I haven't looked at over recent years, but haven't you? Don't have to think very hard on that. You find the Jewish names everywhere.
Would you like to talk a little bit about your own career and its effect on your home life, the choices you made?
Well, frankly, you know, until I took my job, I never thought of my life as being a career. I was very active wife and mother. You know, I used to do my own sewing, and cooking and baking, and we always celebrated the holidays here. And my house was the sort of the head of the family, although my husband was the youngest member of the family, but there wasn't anybody else to take on the leadership, so it was ours. We never had a very glittering social life. We never belonged to the country clubs, and, you know, I didn't dance, and my husband didn't dance. We didn't play cards. We never swapped husbands or wives. I don't know just how to say. I think my life was very full, but I think because we loved books, and we went to a concert. We generally enjoyed the same concert, you know, same kinds of things. We were very fortunate in having some very good friends, and people like ourselves, you know. They didn't dance, they didn't play cards either. Always great talkers, you know. We were a talking family. And I always maintained my linkage with my family in Boston and in New York. It's meant a great deal to me.
And then your career, when you took the full-time job.
When I took the full-time job, it was an enlargement of my life. It did broaden my opportunities. I met a great many people in the field, wonderful people. I must say that community relations has attracted a very high caliber of men. I have to say men because there weren't any women. I'm ashamed to tell you that I was the only woman all through the years, which is a reflection. There are many good women now.
Your voice was heard, though, was it not, in the National Council?
Oh, yes. I was on the executive board of the NCRAC for many years. And, of course, my colleagues always chided me because they said when the annual financial statements were distributed across the country, you know, the Council of Federations and Welfare Funds distributes them. In many cities, they asked, how come that Pittsburgh spends so little? Being a woman, I was given so much less salary than the men were getting. Everybody was telling me that I was one of the top people in the country, but as far as salary was concerned, it was one of the lowest. Isn't that something?
It sure is.
And even what I got, I had to fight for. I never got a voluntary increment. I had to ask for it. And there were times when they offered me an increment, and they wouldn't give it to the girls in the office, so I used the increment for them. You know, they were married women. They had to support families. And I felt, don't tell me, but some of our people didn't think that a secretary was worth more than just a minimal salary. I won't mention names, but that's a fact. And I did have a black secretary, by the way, and she was with me for 8 or 9 years. And she was quite happy when she was with me, and I really think I helped her a lot. And she learned a lot while she was with me. And I regret to say that after I retired, she didn't pan out. She dribbled away. She wouldn't come regularly. She lost much of her old stamina. That was just one of my many experiences. Of course, I have my two children, whom I'm very fortunate to have. My daughter is a spinster. She's the elder one of the two. You know, she's the editor of Travel and Leisure magazine, and a very devoted daughter. My son, well, you know who he is. He's over at Carnegie Mellon.
What is his field?
He's physics. Isn't that field that your husband is in? And I think he's the head of the department now. And so, very thankful.
Are your children's commitment to a Jewish way of life as strong as yours?
My daughter was never a churchgoer. I had a hard time keeping her in Sunday school. My son was a little bit more conventional, and I'm happy to say that he adheres a little more closely. And the reason I'm happy to say it is because I think it's rubbed off onto Joan. See, Joan was not brought up with very much Jewish observance in her life. And whatever she has is just what she's picked up from me. She even goes to services with me quite often.
How nice.
And the grandchildren are similarly affected. I'm very grateful, but I always hope that they'll stay with the Jewish commitment, although I realize that nowadays you're never quite sure.
Did you find any conflicts in leaving the house, you know, for a 9 to 5 job as far as the raising of your children was concerned?
Well, they were raised. See, Judith graduated from college, and she never came back to Pittsburgh.
Was she graduate before you took the job?
Yes. Oh, she graduated that very year, and then Simeon went on to Harvard. And then, of course, he was in the Army for 3 years. No, he didn't. The only time that I missed being was when I'd want to bake cakes for the holidays or make gefilte fish. Oh, dear. Then one night I cried. I was making the fish, and it was 12 o'clock at night, and it wasn't done, and I didn't think I was going to be able to. And that was the only time that I ever really yielded to a good feminine cry, because I was so worn out and exhausted. And yet I wouldn't think of letting the holiday go by without making the traditional delicacies. You see, I was trying to hang on to the past, but I think we all should hang on to the past a little bit. I don't want to give up everything. And I say this to my Polish friends and Italian friends: hang on to your distinctive ethnic qualities, because they bring so much color into life and make it so much more worth living. I don't like to see everybody wearing the same kind of clothes and eating the same kind of food and everything. I think that we're betrayed by the tendency to sameness in everything. Of course, the television contributes to that a good deal. The advertising.
Although some of the advertising is taking on an ethnic quality, if you notice.
Yes, rather deliberately. We're talking about ethnic differences and distinctive things. I personally like to see the distinctive characteristics of a group brought out. And yet, I remember that I would get hectic telephone calls when I was at my office from people who resented the fact that a comedian had told a dialect joke. And of course, Jewish comedians are always telling dialect jokes, but we don't seem to mind that so much.
We mind it when a non-Jewish person tells a Jewish dialect joke.
And of course, we have to bear in mind that other nationalities feel the same. You know, the Italians have become sensitive to to all the jokes about the mafia and whatnot, and it's the kind of thing that you just can't casually pass it by. No consideration of anything other than Republican candidates. Republicans dominated the community, and they dominated the political life of the community. It was only, I think it must have been, when the Roosevelt regime started that we began to have Democratic elements. Of course, shall I tell you a secret? That I voted for Eugene Debs the first time I voted in the national election.
What year was that?
Was it about 25?
Was it the first year the women got to vote?
Yes. Wasn't that 24?
Something like that.
Yeah. And you know, Norman Thomas, Council of Jewish Women, brought Norman Thomas to Pittsburgh many times, and we thought he was so admirable. And I used to take pride in the fact that I was an independent voter. I don't anymore, because I think if you want to throw your vote away, be an independent. I think you have to tie up with some organization. And I don't know how much experience any of you had with David Lawrence. I think he was a real politician, a good politician. He accomplished so much that was good. And that was organization. And for that matter, I don't think Roosevelt could ever have done the things that he did if he didn't have the organization behind him in the big cities of America. So I've become a little bit practical. Pragmatic, isn't that the word, in this regard? But of course, in Pittsburgh, we moved over from the Republican mayoralties to the Democratic, and now we're in that sort of no man's land, aren't we? With Mr. Flaherty.
Picture of unions in Pittsburgh will surely change.
Oh, yes. The whole evolution of the CIO. You know, it was right here in Pittsburgh, Murray. I had a great deal of work with them. They were marvelously cooperative, the CIO, in all civil rights activities. One of their staff people was always available. You know, I didn't mention that one of the things that I helped to create and kept alive for a good many years was the Committee on Immigration. By bringing in a great many people from the different church groups and the ethnic groups and getting them to write letters, we did help change the immigration laws a little bit.
And the union took
it. Wasn't it? Yes. Oh, yes. Oh, yes. They were right with us. I want to give them full credit. One of the most effective people who used to come to Harrisburg when we were working for civil rights legislation was Harry Boyer, who was the head of the CIO in Pennsylvania. Just on philanthropic support. And
within the synagogues, you mean? Within separate synagogues?
Within the synagogues, but the synagogues too can't carry Jewish education unless they have some formalized kind of thing we now have. And who can look too far into the future? The recurrent wars drain away some of our best youth, and the economic cycles have a very profound effect upon our people. And the invention of new technologies makes a great difference too. When you see what's happened to the railroad systems that you never dreamed of, I used to sniff the railroad yard, you know, coming by. It's a thing of the past now. So we have to be prepared for a world of change. But we can hope that we can survive as groups, as a group, a constructive and creative group in society. I think that I'm inclined to think that we will always have bonds to Jews everywhere. I hope that we never lose that. I mean, that's a very special